small town sheriffs who said, "Listen, I was watching this show last night, Criminal Minds. Is it true that you guys will help us?"
We, as a television show, received remarkable support and input from actual profilers.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today on location is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes. I'm a former state and federal prosecutor. And Jim, I cannot even tell you or our listeners how excited I am today.
Oh, that's great. Me too. I think this is an amazing opportunity because there's going to be a slight deviation, but a very welcome one, from our normal episodes. Because today we have an extremely, extremely special guest.
Hello, I'm Paget Brewster. I play Emily Prentice on Criminal Minds.
Yes, you do.
And everybody, just for the record, I want all our listeners to know that, yes, I'm actually sitting across from the actress who plays Emily Prentice. My first celebrity ever, Jim.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no, totally true. Jim hides me. He doesn't like me to meet people.
Oh.
Yeah, totally true.
I don't know any celebrities other than Paget now, but... Anyway, it's so good to have you, Paget. Thank you for coming on Best Case, Worst Case.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to talk today about a couple of your cases, the cases that you worked as Emily Prentice on Criminal Minds. And I think we'll start with the very first episode you appeared in. And that was...
Well, that was Lessons Learned.
Yes.
Written by... Jim Clemente.
I did write it, yes.
Oh, no. And you wrote it? Oh, this is going to be bad. Everyone get ready. Jim's going to be bragging.
No, I'm not. I'm just going to say that it was the very first episode I wrote. And it was an episode that I wrote about an experience I had when I went to Guantanamo to interview detainees after 9/11. And it's a very interesting experience. It was not what I expected at all. And so I wanted to be able to share that with the world because I thought we did learn a few lessons along the way. So if you remember, Paget, Emily's first time in the squad room was the beginning of this episode. And what happens is Hotch tells Gideon that he wants Gideon to take the new person with him on this trip down to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the camera turns, and it's you. How were you feeling when you in your very first scene in Criminal Minds?
Now, the episode previous
right,
to
they shot that, right, and they put it in, right? They put in an introduction.
There was an introduction before your episode, but I was in the first scene and the last scene.
Right.
I show up in his office. So the character wasn't created or developed.
Right.
And at that point... I feel like I might have been on a trial basis. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I think we were happy to get you.
Listen, I was thrilled to do it.
I feel like it worked out.
It worked out pretty well.
Yeah, so.
But my first scene in that,
right,
in the behavioral analysis unit where I'm looking up the catwalk.
Right.
And just, you know, trying to throw Hotch eyeballs like, take me with you. I want to learn. I want to know. I want to join the team. I want to be on the team was what you wrote. And
right.
Hotch says, I don't know.
No, I think it's Gideon that said, I don't even know who she is.
Well, that's right.
Is
Hotch is saying you take her because I had already met Hotch.
Right.
Hotch is telling Gideon take her. And then Gideon's like, I don't know who this person is. I don't know.
Does she even have a go bag? And what do you do?
What Jim Clemente wrote, which is I lean down and I pick up my little go bag and I put it on my desk.
Now, what a go bag is this bag or a ready bag. Every FBI agent has one and it has everything they need to survive for at least a few days on the road. And they have to have it with them at all times, either at their desk or in their car, because at any moment they can be called to any place on the planet and you have to be ready for it. And Paget was ready. as Emily Prentice.
Well, so tell me what, I'm really curious, Padgett. So what is it like to audition or to get a part where you're going to play an FBI agent? Are you just excited about it because it's a part, or does it make you think differently because it's an FBI agent?
There were a couple of different things going on at the time that I got the job with Criminal Minds. First of all, I had met most of the cast when they were filming the pilot in Vancouver 2 years before. I was in Vancouver shooting a made-for-TV movie, and I knew Lola Glaudini, who played Elle Greenaway in the first year and a half of Criminal Minds. And when her character left, I joined the show. But I had watched Criminal Minds, and I was, at that time, one of those people who reads every book that civilians can get their hands on about serial killers and stalkers. And, you know, I just was one of those people. So
you were primed.
I was ready, and I knew more than I think most people. Not most people, but now I know more than most people. But at that time, I just was, I liked the show. I had shot three movies in a row and hated shooting movies. I just wanted to be back on a show. I had been on a Showtime show previously called Huff for 2 years. And my agents called while I was watching an episode of Criminal Minds in Canada and said, I was sitting in the Sutton Place Hotel, the same place where I'd met the cast, a year later. And my agent said, would you go in and meet for a part on Criminal Minds? And I was like, what? In the room, looking at it on TV.
Wow.
So I went in and met with them. I ended up not auditioning. I went and met with, at Mark Gordon's office, Ed Bernero, Chris Mundy, Simon Mirren. And what they said was they were hoping to create a character. They felt they had reached a point where the characters were finishing each other's sentences and there wasn't a separation of personality. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to bring in someone new onto the cast that could meet everybody again the way the audience would. And we would have, you know, form new relationships. And this had to be someone who they decided would be a forensic linguist, who spoke, I think,
multiple languages,
five or six languages. Yeah.
She's pretty amazing.
It's a great character. Yeah. I mean, it's an intimidating because I'm not that smart and I'm not good with a gun. I went shooting with Ed Bernero and Glenn, our UPM.
Sorry, what's a UPM?
Oh, a unit production manager.
So he's like the head producer. But let me just, I think this is a good time to take a little aside and just make a statement here. One of the great things about you coming on the show and about the cast in general is that when I got involved in the show, I said two things to Ed Bernero. If you help us, because I was still in the BAU at the time, if you help us do our work, then I will absolutely help you. And I'll do it for nothing because I'm an FBI agent and we can't get paid. So he was like smiling for both reasons because he said he definitely wanted to help us. And the fact that you, as Emily Prentice and the rest of the cast, actually depict what it is, the different services that the BAU provides. We're educating the world, including local law enforcement, about our services. And while I was a BAU agent, several times we got calls from small town sheriffs who said, listen, I was watching this show last night, Criminal Minds. Is it true that you guys will help us? And we're like, yes, absolutely. And every time that happened, I called up Ed Bernero and I said, thank you. So I want to thank you, Padgett, for doing that, because what you and your character and the other characters do is actually educate the public about the dangers that are out there, because we do try to show the spectrum of different offenders. And they're not all the guys with serial killer glasses and wearing frumpy clothes. Many of them look like average Americans, and they're in average American situations. They're not all, you know, stranger danger kind of people. And we wanted to make sure the public was aware of that.
Well, I think the reason that exists is because of the presence of you and Jim Fitz and Emily Batcher. We, as a television show, received remarkable support and input from actual profilers. And I don't know how often that happens with fictionalized procedural shows on television.
It didn't happen much then, but now it does because we have XG Productions, and this is what we do. We actually consult on or in the writer's room or on set or both, or when somebody's writing a pilot for a new series. We have real experts that are in that genre actually consult with the writers and the producers and the directors so that they get it right. Authenticity is what we bring. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why Criminal Minds is still on the air in season 14.
I think that's a large part of it. Of course, it can't all be accurate.
Oh, no, no. We have
you
to
guys don't actually
time.
Fly in a jet.
We don't fly in that jet. I did one time when I went to Guantanamo Bay.
And the Gitmo twist.
Yes, exactly. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
Yes. So the Gitmo twist. So after you get brought into the team, well, Mandy sees that you're ready, so he takes you maybe begrudgingly onto the plane. You're sitting there, and Mandy is talking about strategy, and he's playing chess with Goobler's character,
yeah.
Dr. Reed. Yeah. And so, you know, they're playing chess, and he uses basically an example of how he's not worried about where he's moving his pieces, mm-hmm. but it's how he moves his pieces, how diligently he places them, how firmly, how quickly he pulls his hand off, how confident he is. Those things are tells about what he really feels. What he's trying not to telegraph is actually telegraphing. And so you're sitting there and you're like watching this happen and you're taking this in and you're seeing how Gideon is sort of teaching the young guy on the squad, the younger Gideon, Dr. Reed. How are you feeling while that's going on in that scene? Like, what's going on in this brand new profiler's mind?
You mean, what was I personally thinking at that time?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. I mean, it's so, everything is...
Is it kind of a blur at this point?
Well, the actual shooting of the scenes are a blur because I've now shot 173 episodes.
Wow.
Great.
And the way memory we have found works is you memorize your lines the day you do them and then you wipe that clean.
So you can memorize
so
more.
So that you can memorize the next day.
Right.
Otherwise, there would be millions of pages of, so my memory isn't as a craftsperson doing something.
Right.
It's senses of being, I loved Mandy, but I'd heard he was nuts. I mean, a lot of people said Mandy was nuts, but he was lovely.
Oh,
and
he's great
to watch. And I loved Goobler because I'd met him on the pilot in Canada and we hung out and went out to dinner. And so my overwhelming memory of that situation was, I can't believe I'm doing it. I can't believe I'm doing it. I can't believe I'm doing it. Because it was so exciting.
Right.
And it is also, there is a pressure, especially with you there. There is a pressure to not do a hammy TV show.
Mm.
To not, the material has to be treated with a greater respect than most TV. And I'm not saying I don't care what anyone wrote, but there are actual people who risk their lives or themselves emotionally. So some of the things that you've seen, you might not have run around with a gun, France, yet, did you?
No.
But what you risked personally to do your job,
yeah,
is a greater...
She did a lot of difficult cases.
Horrible. And most people can't do that. None of us could do it. All of the actors on that show know. In the end, Mandy was uncomfortable saying those words.
Right.
Mandy was uncomfortable acting out those situations.
Right, because they were so difficult.
So imagine how, I mean, you don't have to imagine. You've done it. You've both done it.
Yeah.
But that's what strikes us.
So it's
as
a
actors.
Weight on you. It's a pressure
it's a weight,
on you.
A pressure
wow.
on us to.
See, that's something we didn't even think
no,
about.
Never
oh, this
about
is
that.
Intimidating to me to do this podcast with you.
Why?
Because I'm afraid of treading on real ground. What you do and
yeah, but,
how you have served.
But you've always been so respectful about the actual work that underlies this. So I wouldn't worry about
no,
it.
And your attitude is such,
required.
Such a tribute to you. And that brings up the question. The one question I really wanted to ask Padgett today that I was so excited about when Jim said you do the podcast. What I want to know is what it was like for you with no training to get in that dark world. Do you feel like it has impacted you as a person in the same way, maybe slightly different, obviously, for obvious reasons, but in the same way that sort of grimness impacts those of us professionals doing it? I mean, you're having to learn about it. You're having to talk about it. You're having to live in it and, you know, act like you're experiencing it, which has to be have a certain darkness to it.
It does. And actually, Jim helped me through this on the phone. We talked on the phone about this because I very quickly, because I wanted to know everything. I wanted to do the character justice. I wanted to learn how to shoot well. I wanted to study languages. I wanted to read everything I could. I had had a very amateur airport paperback understanding of serial killers. And it's nothing against anyone who wrote Roy Hazelwood and Douglas and all the people who had written books. Basically, that's a part of what David Rossi is.
Right.
The character Joe Mantegna plays is one of these writers,
right.
An actual profiler who wrote books. But I got all of the actual FBI training manuals for psychosexual, sadistic. And it was, I don't know if I should have read them and seen those photos. They're not for the general public, and there's a reason for that. So I did a spin out for about 2 months, and I did a lot of work on this house that is legal but extremely defensive and unusual for a residential home. And you told me not to tell people what that is because that's giving away.
Let's not give it away.
I won't give it away. I've spoken about it before. But what I found was I was becoming afraid of people. Mm-hmm. And I thought I knew more than I did. And even in the airport, it was constant. What is it? Hypervigilance?
Yes.
For weeks, maybe even months. I just remember over and over again it happening in the airport where I was wondering, is that that person's kid? Mm-hmm. Is that that person's kid? And I was afraid. I was upset. It's kind of coming back now. It's if you can know what we as a species are capable of.
Yeah, the worst human things humans do to other humans.
Yeah, that's the worst thing on Earth. A tsunami is one thing.
Yeah.
But what a human being can do psychologically and physically to another human being is terrifying.
Yeah.
And all of those books that I read before I even met with anyone on Criminal Minds, I think part of me wanted to seek out some sort of information as though that would protect me.
Absolutely. And I believe that's really why women are the number one consumers of crime, true crime and real crime on TV and in other media, because you have a nurturing nature. And not only do you want to see how to protect yourself, but protect others that you love. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really why it's a female-driven market.
That's interesting, because I would also say that women are, and I'm guessing still, I can only speak for my growing up as a child, told be nice, don't offend anyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which includes if the elevator doors open and someone's there that you immediately are afraid of, you don't get out of the elevator, you stay in it,
right.
In a parking lot. I mean, that's what's, I think maybe women are consumers of literature and true crime and crime films and books and television shows because it's scary being a woman. It's scary being a woman.
I get it. And so
it just is.
No, she's so right about that. And we've talked about this when we're talking about shows that we've been creating or consulting on, that women think differently than men. We're different. And I think, I'm certainly more, Jim Never, I don't think, thinks about what's going to happen to him in a parking garage as he's walking to his car when he leaves the office. I think about it the entire way to my car. And it's not being trained by Jim for situational awareness. No, it's literally just being a woman and understanding that I'm vulnerable in that circumstance, because usually I'm wearing spiked heels and carrying a bunch of crap, right? So I just think it's interesting to get your perspective on sort of living in that darkness and that you have struggled with it.
With the materials that I got to study for this part, that I was lucky enough to, I went way too far deep into it to a point where it was not helpful. It was, my mind was looking at, I thought my bedroom can lock. It was before I was married. I was living alone. My bedroom can lock. I put a fan on and the sound of the ocean, because if someone breaks in, I don't want to know. The moment they start kicking in the door, now I know. And I can arm myself. But if someone's in the house, I don't want to hear a noise and go investigate.
Right, right, right. You don't want to be that person on the movie screen don't go in there.
I would rather they take everything and leave.
Right.
Then, so I have noise in my bedroom so that I won't. And that's odd. Mm-hmm. That's unusual. But I still do it.
Hey, best case, worst case listeners, have you guys tried HelloFresh? I have, and I get very excited when that box is delivered to my place and I open it and find what's inside for me to cook that week. There's something for everyone with HelloFresh's selection. There are three plans you can choose from: Classic, Veggie, and Family. You can use HelloFresh to rediscover the excitement of cooking. I always feel confident when I'm cooking HelloFresh, like you will, with the simple recipes outlined on pictured, step-by-step instruction cards. I love the instruction cards. I love seeing if my recipe looks like them when they're finished. HelloFresh believes that cooking should be simple and convenient, not a chore. These meals are delivered right to your door in a recyclable, insulated package. And there are many benefits of subscribing. You can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Get out of that recipe rut and start cooking outside of your comfort zone by discovering new delicious recipes in each week's box. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com/bestcase30 and enter the promo code bestcase30. For $30 off, that's $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com/bestcase30 and enter promo code bestcase30. Did you guys know that lack of sleep can cause inflammatory markers in the body to increase and that can damage your hair cells? Well, there's a new product out there that can help with that. It's called Nutrafol. Nutrafol is a new, safe, and effective strategy to take control of your hair health. It's made with 100% drug-free nutraceutical ingredients that are clinically shown to improve thinning hair. It's recommended by over 850 top doctors and some of the best salons in the country. Now, there's both a men's and a women's version. Nutrafol's formula for women is specifically developed with women's lifestyles and life cycles in mind. Unlike men, whose primary hair health concern is genetics, for women, stress plays a huge role in hair thinning. The daily demands of that work-life balance, juggling, trying to do it all well, this creates elevated stress hormones in our bodies that are not our hair follicles' best friends. You should know Nutrafol is 100% drug-free and manufactured in the U.S. in an FDA-certified facility that contains no GMO, soy, eggs, dairy, gluten, peanuts, shellfish, tree nuts, wheat, yeast, artificial flavors, or colors. To get your first month supply with a subscription for just $10, visit Nutrafol.com and use the promo code BESTCASE during checkout. That's Nutrafol, Nutrafol.com. And don't forget to use the promo code BESTCASE during checkout.
Okay, well, let's get back to the Gitmo twist.
Okay.
So you're on the plane. You're on the BAU jet, which the only time I ever flew on that jet, and it's the director's jet, is when I flew to and from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So this was a perfect time to write about it. Because when you're flying into Cuba, American planes can't go through Cuban airspace. They have to come at the landing path at a 90-degree angle and at the last minute make a sharp right turn. It's called the Gitmo twist, and then land. Well, everybody loved that aspect, but the plane that we use on the show, I hate to say this, is not a real plane. And it can't make 90-degree turns in the middle of the air. We'd have to move the whole stage and everything. But I came up with a way to build a little platform and put two seats on it and a table with the chess pieces. And we just tilted it really fast. And everybody on the plane just leaned to the left to make it look like we made a right-hand turn. And then they're straightening back up. They're turning the camera the opposite way. And it all worked out seamlessly.
Great. It sounded beautiful. It looked beautiful.
It was great.
This, in acting, what we did to make the Gitmo twist work as actors, it's called star trekking.
Oh, really?
Because on Star Trek, when the ship, that thing didn't move, they were all moving.
Got it.
If we have to move a little bit, if you're shooting anything on a boat,
yeah,
you Star Trek, the bridge. It's basically, okay, we're on the bridge. People have, let's Shatner it. It's all about
That's awesome.
Faking that movement.
Well, you did a very good job. So you land there, you find out that they're actually treating these detainees badly, actually torturing them. And Mandy does a total twist. He treats this guy with respect and dignity. He gets this guy's trust. He gives him opportunities to pray, gives him water to drink, and talks to him like a person. Mm-hmm. And at first, this guy is, he's just completely silent. He's a Hafiz. He's reciting the Quran from memory, which is one of the lines you had in that show. Mm-hmm. You also were able to interpret some of the things he said. Mm-hmm. And the way he pronounced the particular word told you that he was Yemeni.
Right.
And again, your character is like, wow. I mean, she just comes up with these things left and right, which was great. And so you actually helped the team right on your first mission. And that's something that I have to say on my first profile, I helped the team because I was left-handed, because when I envisioned the case, I saw it from a left-hand perspective, and I realized everybody else in the room was right-handed. And I said, that makes the difference in this particular case. Another guy on his first case, Armin Showalter, he saw a soccer shoe sitting on top of a garbage heap and said, that's a brand new Lotto soccer shoe. That's worth about $250. What's that doing there? And that focus on that, it turns out the guy was from South America, where those shoes are very popular, the offender. And women had described him as white and black, and nobody could understand that. It was because he had kind of white features, but he had dark skin. He was South American. What? So anyway, any little tiny detail that you know as an individual, you add to the round table, and that can crack a case.
Right.
So that was what you did when you were watching the monitors in this episode. And at some point, a couple of times, there were kind of moments where you got to say, yeah, I can do that. And mm-hmm. and I think it, you know, your character was brand new mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously wanted to be a profiler and needed to, you know, fit in. And I think
which mirrored my personal experience exactly. as an actress joining this show is that I wanted to do a good job and I wanted to prove my worth and I wanted to the cast and to that character that I am good enough to be here and I do bring something that wasn't here before.
Absolutely.
And I hope I did. I mean, it's,
well,
you wrote it again. It's how well written that is in that.
Yeah, but you bring it to life and that's important. I mean, when we write words, we have in our minds an idea of how we think it should look. And fortunately for me, many times that's based on what actually happened in the real world. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that's translatable or producible for TV. You guys, the actors, have to make it real. And as I've said 100 times or maybe more, there's 300 episodes, so probably at least 300 times, you guys actually make us look good. You make profilers so good that today, even though when I became a profiler, there was no such thing as a forensic psychology PhD program. Mm-hmm. They're in every major university now, and that's because of
wow.
you.
Wow.
Absolutely.
No. Oh, no, it is.
Oh,
sure.
It's absolutely true.
It's absolutely because of the show, for sure.
It's the same way. When LA Law came out, 20% more females matriculated at law school because mm-hmm. LA Law had strong female characters. When The X-Files came out, 100,000 applications a year to the FBI when it had been 10,000 a year before that.
What?
And it's been there since then. And part of that is also Criminal Minds keeps that up right now. So there's at least 100,000
wow.
people who apply. Less than like 1,000, maybe 1,000 get in a year.
I meet a lot of young women, like young teens and
Right
before college.
Because you're their
who
idol.
Want to study.
Do you think they're going to look at me and say, oh, I want to do what he does? No, it's what you
no,
do.
No, it's really surprising. Yeah. And an electrician who I use here at the house, his niece applied and got into like a scholarship program through the FBI studying criminology.
Really?
Yeah.
So like an honors intern program.
Something. I don't
yeah.
know what it was, but
yeah,
she...
Yeah, it's an honors intern program.
Well, see, so that brings up a great point for me to ask you. I tell Jim and our listeners, I don't like playing the girl card. Oh, wait, I always play the girl card. Anyway, I don't do it that often, but it does seem to me that you are a role model for young women. I can't imagine, but that must bring a lot of pressure. How does that make you feel knowing that you are a role model for young women who may want to get into this kind of field because of a character you're portraying on TV?
It's interesting because our fans are remarkable and supportive, and we're very lucky. I have a lot of fans that I see often because I'll do live stage shows or comedy things. And they've all become friends with each other because they've met on Twitter or Instagram and I'm sort of out of that. I don't do a lot of social media. I'm not crazy about where we're going with it. I'm not crazy about everyone being
in
attached
their phones
to their phones
and not actually interacting
with each other. Right. But what's happened is because of these fans, and some of them are called the Pageteers, and some they have names. They've met on Twitter and they hang out together and
cool.
they fly to each other's states sometimes. And these are all women between 18 and 27.
Wow.
And
you're a hero.
It's good. No,
she
I'm
is.
Not. I'm
yeah.
not. But I just, what they appreciate is that Prentice is strong and
mm-hmm.
she'll do anything
That's right.
for her family,
mm-hmm.
for her team. And that's how they want to be.
Right.
And they have made their own teams. And it's remarkable to see.
That's great.
And they're all respectful and lovely and kind and supportive. And well, there's not a bad egg in the bunch.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it is. And it really reminds me, I mean, it's such a tribute to you, because I worked with some women in the FBI. And I thought that, to a woman, they were badasses. But they were no nonsense. It was just this, I'm an FBI agent. It wasn't, I'm a female FBI agent. I'm an FBI agent. So I can do everything. It was never a question in their mind. And I think that's one of the things that I feel like is a tribute to how you play the role.
Yeah. And Emily Vetcher, who was the actual FBI agent, yes, who your character was based on, I brought her in to meet the writers and producers, and they loved her. And that's why we named your character Emily. And you guys got to talk and hang out.
She was hung out since.
Oh, that's great. She loves the fact that you portray her in such an amazing way. And in this particular episode, your character is able to help Gideon and Reed do what they need to do to get this ghost detainee to talk. And they're able to stop a dirty bomb from being loosed on this new mall that's open.
And how they do it, this is the brilliance of Jim Clemente writing this, is Gideon, while allowing the detainee, the terrorist,
mm-hmm,
to pray at certain times of the day before sunset, is moving the time slowly earlier. And this guy doesn't have access to a clock. He's in cuffs. He's in an interrogation room. They have a feed sent to them from Penelope Garcia. The door opens in this interrogation. Gideon is standing in the room, knowing that the terrorist has been making bombs. They know something's coming. They just don't know where. So Gideon has slowly moved the time of this terrorist's prayers earlier and earlier. And he reaches for his earbud in the room and says, oh my God, and leaves the room, opens the door. So now Dr. Reed and Emily Prentice are standing in the doorway, the detainee, the terrorist, is still in the room, and a television screen, is showing a montage of footage as though it's being streamed live from a news service, saying there's been an attack, hundreds are injured. Gideon runs back in the room and says, how could you do this? And the terrorist he makes a gesture with his hands once he sees the footage and realizes, oh, it's done.
Yeah.
My team has killed all of these infidels. And he releases his hands. And that's how Gideon knows. So Gideon gets him talking.
Yeah, so he says, how could you do this? How could you do this? Those innocent people, they weren't innocent. You know, he goes, they didn't hurt you. And he said, they hurt me by existing. And that actually powerfully affected Mandy. After he shot that scene, he literally went into the next room and slumped to the floor in tears.
Crying. And Jim literally had to come in and sit down with him on the floor and talk him through this.
Because what I told him was, your character is going to teach the world how we get this kind of person not to hate us anymore. How we win them over to our side. Show them that we're not evil. And if you're not strong enough to do this, how are we going to protect all those people out there? And he got back up and he went back in.
But to your credit, specifically, technically, this man who was our terrorist, who was going to kill as many people as possible just because he considered them infidels because of his religion, was given a platform in your script to speak about why he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's right or wrong, you didn't make him a cartoon.
No.
He was a grieving father whose son had been killed. And that's something you just don't see on network television. You humanized him. Not as a creature, as a monster, as a ridiculous. He's a man,
right,
in charge of a group of people who are carrying out his orders.
Right.
And they all think they're right.
Right. And Gideon is a man. And they built a human bridge between each other. And that's how we got past this. And when we did, they're flying back on the plane. And at this point, you've proven yourself to Gideon. You've actually impressed him with how you've helped.
Yes, and they're playing.
Because in your ear, you're telling him what the guy means or what that tells you about where he's from. And when he reveals it to the guy's like, wow, you know everything about me. So you proved yourself. And at the end, Gideon says, he looks at the chessboard and he said, "Do you play?" And you said,
Yes, I play.
And he bought you in and he started playing chess with you. Yeah, and that was funny. Symbolically you really joining the
Being
team now.
Accepted.
And after that, everything, you were just in. Right. So
that's
that episode. I mean, I get chills.
He does have goosebumps.
Thinking about it because it all worked out so well. You know, it could have been, it could have fallen on its face. Mm-hmm. It could have fallen flat and not worked. If you didn't bring that life and energy that you bring to your acting, then, well, it wouldn't have been a good episode. Mm-hmm. But as it was, it turned out to be a great episode. And it's certainly gotten the message out to tens of millions of people around the world, which is amazing, that we're not monsters and we can use our brains instead of torture to get information mm-hmm. from people.
Well, it has. And as our listeners know, I hate complimenting Jim, but I will in this case, because when you all were describing the episode, which I admit it's been a long time since I saw, Mission Impossible just stole that from you.
Remember, we just saw that together last weekend.
Jim.
They did. They had that.
They stole the TV and the bad guy, and they made the guy think that
Blitzer was doing the same thing
and announcing the bombs had gone off and whatever. So they stole that from you,
Jim.
It's
called an homage.
I don't know.
Right?
It seems like there should be some sort of what do they call it?
I'm sure somebody else did.
Not a real writer until someone steals it.
That's right.
Well, anyway, we just want to ask one last question of you about this episode and your experience on it.
Yes, because you are on Best Case, Worst Case. So how do you feel like this episode and joining the show was for you, a best case or a worst case?
Oh, best case.
And why?
Listen, it's been a long road. It's had some pit stops.
We'll talk about them next time, hopefully, when we have you back.
But I'm very glad that I was accepted by this team, by this show and these people, and glad that I was able to come back after I left for a while. And glad that right now, I think season 14, what we're doing right now, we're so strong and having a great time and appreciating each other and enjoying what we do.
Well, thank you, Padgett and Emily Prentice, both for being part of our show, our podcast, and our lives. This has been an amazing episode. And to our listeners, till next time, thanks for listening to Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba. And hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stories about child sexual abuse can make us feel powerless. But the good news is that there are organizations working to prevent abuse and keep kids safe. Darkness to Light and their Stewards of Children prevention training has trained more than 1.4 million adults to protect, recognize, and react responsibly to child sexual abuse.
But there's more work to do, and with their 4 million by 2020 goal, Darkness to Light is setting their sights on training 4 million adults around the country to keep kids safe. By donating to Darkness to Light, you can help reach this goal that will make communities across the country safer places for kids.
It starts with you. Visit www.d2l.org today to give. That's www.d2l.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.